This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Jeffrey Tambor, stars in the Amazon series Transparent as a transgender woman making her transition from male to female late in life. Tambor won an Emmy and a Golden Globe for his performance. In season one, Tambor's character Mort started transitioning to Mora, revealed her female identity to her three adult children and ex-wife, and started appearing in public in women's clothes. All the episodes of season two will be available for binging starting tomorrow. Tambor also co-starred in the TV series Arrested Development and The Larry Sanders Show. Transparent was created by Jill Soloway and was inspired by watching her parent come out at the age of 75 as a transgender woman. Let's start with a clip from season one's first episode. Mora is at her transgender support group and is describing how she just started testing out appearing in public wearing women's clothes.
Well, I went to Target and I took her out, you know what I mean?
And I got into, the checkout line. And the girl at the cash register said,
I need to see some ID with that credit card of yours. And you know what that's like, right? And I just knew, I said, this is going to not be good. This is going to get ugly. And so she just kept looking at me. And then she said, oh. Like that, you know? And she rung up the batteries or something. So that was a big victory. And I didn't, I was like, do not cry in front of this woman. Do not cry in front of this woman.
Thank you for your share, Mora. Thanks for being vulnerable with us.
One more thing. I made a commitment here last week that I was going to come out to my kids, and I didn't do it. Because it just wasn't time, you know? But I will, and it will be soon.
Yeah.
I promise you. I promise you. I promise you. They are so selfish. I don't know how it is I raised three people who cannot see beyond themselves.
Jeffrey Tambor, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
So did you ask for the part on Transparent, or did they come to you?
Well, I was out in Los Angeles. I live in New York. And I was out in Los Angeles to do a talk show. And when I got off the plane, there was this script. And my agents said, this is a fabulous script. You should really look at this. And I read it, and I called them back immediately. I hadn't even gotten to my hotel from the airport yet. And I said, I'm in.
Do you have any idea why they thought of you to play the part of Mora?
Actually, Jill told me that I remind her of her mappa, of her parent. And
Mappa is her word for mother, papa.
Her parent, Carrie, yes. And I think something about we have sort of our humor and our sort of dry humor and the way we, you know, we carry ourselves in the world. And I do remember the day Carrie came on the set. Actually, it was my 70th birthday. And I was so nervous. But I somehow won her approval and she was very kind and very supportive.
How did you find the part within yourself that could identify as a woman? Because you need to identify as a woman to play this part.
Well, one of the things that I am amazed at is I thought that the hardest part would be the external, would be the nails and the hair and the makeup and the dress and then the heels and the blah, 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 blah. And actually, that wasn't the hardest. But that was very, very, very easy for me. And I liked it. And I even liked, you know, I mean, who doesn't like a good mani-pedi? And so that came all very, very easy. what's interesting about playing Moore is that I get to use more of Jeffrey than I've ever used in any role, and probably even in playing Jeffrey. And I think that's the a remarkable part about it, and truly the most surprising part about doing this role.
Can you give me an example of something you have to play as Moore that you never had a chance to do before, or that you learned about yourself?
Well, I do notice that when I'm playing Moore, I'm much more, and I want to be. I'm sort of careful of the words because they're so stereotypical. But I do find myself much more sensitive, and I find myself much more vulnerable, and I find myself less protective and less protection and less armor, and that's a real surprise to me.
Well, you're also playing somebody who is very vulnerable because they're transitioning from
right.
male to female and feel
right.
like they're being stared at all the time and passed judgment on.
Right.
And
not only that, Moore is not very good at it and doesn't really know how to make herself up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Moore is like a teenager. She just, she doesn't know where her friends are. She doesn't know where her home is. She doesn't know what to do at the LGBTQ center. And that to me is very, very interesting and very, very wonderful. Those are many wonderful notes to play as an actor and a person.
Now, your character isn't glamorous and fashionable in the way that, for instance, Laverne Cox, one of the stars of Orange is mm-hmm. the New Black, is.
Mm-hmm.
When your character Moore dresses in more formal attire, like a long purple dress with like sequiny, spangly things all over it, I am reminded of what my parents' generation, the women of my parents' generation, used to wear to, like, weddings and bar mitzvahs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, when you dress in that women's formal attire, who do you see when you look in the mirror? Do you see people that you know, relatives that you know, friends?
No, I don't. I actually see, as I said, I do see Moore. I remember when Reese Ernst and Zachary Drucker and Jill Soloway came to my hotel room when we were just preparing, and we sort of did our first field trip, and we were going to take Moore out for the first time. And I was going to meet Moore for the first time, and so we went into the to the bathroom. After a long, long talk, and we had much talk. And I was scared stiff, and we began the makeup, and I did the hair, or they did the hair, and I remember Moore just appearing on my face, and I went, well, that's exactly how she looks. And we dressed her up, and we went to we went out dancing at a place called the Oxwood, and I remember walking through the lobby of that hotel. My legs were just shaking, and I said to myself, never, 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 never forget this moment, because this is exactly how it is to live as Moore. And the odd thing is no one was looking at me.
So what was it like for you to feel like you passed?
I don't know if I passed. I think I got through the night.
Were people staring at you?
Not at the Oxwood and not at the hotel. That was what was very odd. I did go on another field trip where I did have that, where I went to a grocery store, and I was in the middle of the aisle. I was just like doing, what if Moore went shopping? And I wanted to find out what Moore would wear and what she would buy and things like that, you know, just not to sound too actory, but that's how you research and that's how you find. And one person did stare at me in the aisle and had somewhat of a sneer on their face. And I also said, do not forget this, because this is what it looks like to get clocked. And I don't know if they were looking at me and saying, well, that's Jeffrey Tambor,
mm-hmm.
or that's a trans woman. I have no idea, but I remember the sneer on the face, and it wasn't pretty.
Moore is in the position of having recently started appearing in public as a woman in women's clothes with a woman's
mm-hmm.
wig.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes she kind of passes, you know, unnoticed and just blends in. And other times
mm-hmm.
people stare at her with kind of, you know, confusion or anger,
mm-hmm.
Hostility. And I'm wondering, like, in your own life as you, as Jeffrey Tambor, if you were ever in a similar position where people were just, based on how you looked, that you got, you know, hostile or mocking looks from people.
I have two things I can point to. But what's dangerous about me pointing them out is that I could never say that either one of them even equals what it is to be a transgender woman or a man.
Sure.
However, I do know what it is to be otherized in the community. When I was a young boy in San Francisco, I remember being sent home from a person playing with a friend, and I remember the mother saying, tell Jeffrey to go home. And I said to the girl, I said, why? And she goes, my mother says that you're the people who killed Christ. And I got home. And what was the worst part of that was when I told, this really getting me as I'm saying it. I remember when I told that at dinner to my parents, and I remember them looking up into each other's eyes. And I will never forget that, because it wasn't even fear. It was like, there it is. So I kind of know what that was. And also I remember I grew up, and I don't think I've ever talked about this. I grew up with a lisp. I talk like this because I had braces. And so my name is Jeff. So everyone in my school called me Cliff, unfortunately. And I'd say, no, Jeff. And so they called me Cliff. People would make fun of me because I had this lisp.
How did you lose the lisp? Was taking off the braces sufficient?
No. I went to so many people. And at San Francisco State College, I still had it. And there was a man named Dr. Joe Mitzak, who one day just said, have you ever heard your lisp? And I said, no. So he recorded it. And he said, you're saying S. And I went, oh. He said, this is how you say S. S. And I went, oh, S? And he went, that's correct. And that's what it took.
Wow.
I had to hear it.
That's so smart.
Isn't it amazing? Yes.
So after somebody accused you of killing Christ because you're Jewish and you told your parents, did that lead to things that they had never told you before about anti-Semitism, either they or your grandparents had experienced?
No, because we were in that generation that they were second generation, and that was the thing where everyone was trying so hard to blend and so hard to fit in. So they never talked about it. They absolutely never talked about it. I was bar mitzvahed at gunpoint, by the way.
Okay, so this walks us right to a clip I want to play from the first season. So there's a flashback in the first season where we see that as you're starting to figure out that, you know, you really want to dress as a woman and that there are other men who are that way too, you find out that there's this, like, weekend getaway, this kind of camp for men who dress as women, and you very much want to go. Problem is, it coincides with the bat mitzvah of your daughter. And so one weekend she comes to you and says, and this is all in flashback, she comes to you and says, I don't want to do my bat mitzvah. I don't believe in God. What's the point of this? I don't want to do it. And you kind of say, okay, fine. And then you use that as an opportunity to cancel the bat mitzvah and then kind of sneak off to this camp where you can dress as a woman with other men.
Right, Camp Camellia, yeah.
So flashing forward to the present, in the final episode of the first season, your daughter has just found out that that's why you agreed to cancel her bat mitzvah. And on that day, she's left totally alone. You're at this camp. So she finds out that you really went to this camp, and now she's going to confront you about that. Here it goes.
So Mom tells me that you canceled my bat mitzvah so you could go to some dress-up camp in the woods. Is that true?
No. Not at all. No. I let you cancel it.
I was 13.
Honey, you canceled your bat mitzvah.
13-year-olds don't get to cancel bat mitzvahs.
Honey, yeah. You canceled your bat mitzvah. Yeah. We made an agreement. I respected your mind. I can't get you to do your haftorah. What do you want me to do, point a gun at your head? So don't be so self-centered. There's another world out there. It's not okay. all me, all right. Allie, all my feelings.
In this room, I'm the one who's self-centered. That's...
Well, I believe so.
Oh, that's good. That's rich. Because I don't need Judaism. Who wants to be Jewish? You know, who needs guidance in life? I mean, what on earth would I do with God, you know? So
you can
thank
keep
you.
Your voice down, all right?
Oh, keep my voice down, huh? Because that's our family religion, right?
You're being
secrecy.
A little bit too much. Even for you.
Here's
you
some
think?
Money to go to college, but don't tell anybody. Don't tell Josh Sarah.
Oh, my God, Allie. Yeah.
Why are you always pushing money on me?
Because my beautiful girl, you cannot do anything! You know, you have so much more to say now than when I was writing your checks. Giving you loans, which, by the way, aren't actually loans because you don't pay back. Do you understand? Not 1 cent. I'm paying for your life.
I don't need or want or give a about your money. You can't scream at me anymore. Because I'm an adult, okay? So there we go. It's settled. Done.
I have a question. Now that you're, now that you're not on the payroll anymore. Do you like me? If I didn't give you any money, would you even talk to me?
A great scene from Transparent from the first season with my guest Jeffrey Tambor as Maura, and Gabby Hoffman as his daughter, Allie. So he says to her in that scene about the bat mitzvah, when she says, "What did you want me to do, point a gun at your head?" And you said that you were bar mitzvahed.
At gunpoint.
At gunpoint.
I was being euphemistic.
So what happened at your bar mitzvah?
I was bar mitzvahed at Beth Shalom. And I had trouble. I didn't quite get it all. Part of it was I had a teacher, a wonderful teacher, but he could be very strict. And I remember I asked him. I said, "Can I ask any question?" And he said, "Yes." And he said, "Take your time. Questions take a long time. What is it?" And I said, "How do we know there's a God?" And he said, "Get out." So he threw me out of Sunday school.
And that's an answer.
And I had a little problem with it. And also, I just wasn't into it. Anyhow, I had a bar mitzvah. I learned it from Cantor Bornstein. Actually, I think I was a little dazed during it. Do you remember there used to be a drug called Miltown? Do you know that drug?
Yeah, it was like one of the early anti-anxiety pills.
Yeah. And so my mother, we got out of the car, and my mother said, my mother was really interesting. And she said, "Are you nervous?" I said, "Yeah, I'm really nervous." She goes, "Here." And she gave me a Miltown.
So you were drugged, basically.
Basically drugged.
Your bar mitzvah.
Drugged at my bar mitzvah, yes. But I gave a great speech.
What did you say?
I just sort of did it. I kind of went off script and just started thanking anybody that was in the
You were feeling good.
I was feeling good. I was in the moment.
But, you know, but that leads to an interesting point, which is I think if you're given, like, rote religion without meaning, it's going to have no meaning for you. And if you're, you know, brought up with religion that is really, really, like, vested with deep meaning,
right,
that maybe you'd be, you know, one would be more positively inclined.
Well, I also think this, and this is not to, this is sort of like adjacent. This is question adjacent to what you just said. Mm-hmm. But I also think that when we were in San Francisco, we were very much like the Pfeffermans, not really
like
just
the characters
running.
on Transparent. Yeah,
exactly. We were just we didn't run to the synagogue. We went to on the high holy days. We went, you know, in Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah, and we did the Seder, and we did all that, and we had the Sukkos and things like that. But we were sort of, you know, West Coast Jewish. You know, we did the same delicatessen runs that Shelley does, and so that was another thing. When I read the script, I went, I'm in here. This is my family. I'm right in here. And that sense of humor that they have, where pain is humor and humor is pain, and you zig and you zag, Jill knows that like the back of her hand. She is brilliant at that. So you're laughing at a funeral, and you're crying at a comedy show.
You've said in other interviews that your father gave you the advice, don't celebrate, they'll take it away from you. And this is the kind of advice from, you know, like long periods of suffering and persecution that Jewish people, you know, face through the centuries. But were there times in your family where it was an official celebration, it was your duty to celebrate? Like, you're not supposed to be too happy, but on these days, it's your job to be happy.
Well, my dad's thing was, I mean, we practically had don't celebrate printed on the napkins. It was serious business. But his big thing is, I would say, Dad, I'm on Broadway with George C. Scott. And he would say, shh, don't say anything. Don't tell anybody. Dad, I'm getting married. Shh, don't say nothing. Don't do anything. And that was sort of the thing. So when I get awards, there's a little agita that goes on with this, because I can hear my dad going, shh, don't say anything, don't celebrate. So he honestly, because he was taught, don't celebrate, they'll take it away from you. And his parents were taught that, and his parents and parents, because if you did celebrate and you were visible, it could be very, very dangerous.
Right.
So part of it is just, you know, part of it is trauma, but part of it is fact.
But it doesn't exactly lead to understanding how to experience pleasure and pride and confidence.
Mm. Right. I don't know how to answer your question.
I guess it wasn't really
go,
a question.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did
no,
you,
it's true. But do you want to hear a great moment, a great NPR moment?
Yeah, sure.
And it has to do exactly with what we're talking about. So when we started coming out with our show, and the reviews were just coming out for the first season, and, you know, I was very proud of it, but, you know, it could go any way. And so I'm taking my son up to his Boy Scout, Cub Scout camp for the day, and we're in the car, and it's on a Saturday morning, and we're driving. And NPR, we are both NPR fanatics, and he loves NPR, and he's 11. And all of a sudden, the NPR review comes on of Transparent. And I look in the back seat, you know, I'm looking in the rearview mirror, and the reviewer, and it was a very nice review, mentioned my name. And I looked at him, and and he had this smile on his face. And I will never, never forget that moment, because I think for the first time he knew what I did for a living.
Right.
And it was a great moment.
And you were allowed to be proud.
And I was allowed to be proud. I was. And I actually, you'll pardon the expression, caveled.
That's Yiddish for kind of like shivered with joy.
Yes. It's the opposite of don't celebrate.
Right. You grew up in San Francisco. Your father was a flooring contractor, but I think he'd been a boxer before that. Is that right?
Yeah. He was a light heavyweight. Legend has it.
Mm-hmm.
Legend is that he sparred with Joe Louis. And again, let me really reiterate, legend. And his mom made him give it up because she was so worried about it. But I do remember once when he was selling tile out in the front of the store, and I saw him. He was a very big man. He was about 6'1". And he was stooped over in this position. It was very odd. It was a very submissive position. He was talking to this guy, this short guy. And I later found out that was his boxing trainer. And he was assuming the position that you do in the corner listening to his trainer. And it was a very memorable thing. I also remember once when I was, after he had passed away, and I really loved my dad. I was very, very close to my dad. And my dad was very sort of funny about the don't celebrate, and he would rather I've been a teacher. And he, you know, he was very, very nervous about my being an actor. And I went to clean out his office, and I never knew that he just never really, he just worried about me being an actor. He didn't say much. He didn't, you know, in other words, and I went to get his trophies and his stuff out of his office. And I opened his office door, and there wasn't a single piece of wall space that did not have my picture or reviews on it. It was unbelievable. He had saved every review, but he had never said anything.
So that's great. He was kind of proud and kind of bragging to himself in a space that no one would see.
Exactly, which is exactly right, and exactly
it fits
what
perfectly.
Exactly what that generation did. He did see me on Broadway. I was with Robert Preston in Sly Fox, and then he saw me just before he passed away, in my first film role with Al Pacino in Injustice for All. Hmm. So that was good.
So he was this like large, I imagine, kind of really strong, physically imposing guy because he had been a boxer.
Mm-hmm.
Did he want you to be that kind of, you know, like masculine, physical kind of guy?
I think he had sort of a push-pull on it. You know, he was interesting. He worried about me a lot. He couldn't understand that why I was getting up and going to acting classes at the age of 12 and getting on the bus and going down and taking acting classes in San Francisco. He didn't quite get that. And yet he would come to the plays, and it was very odd. I later found out somebody came up to me and said, you know, your dad supered at the Met. And I said, what? They said, yeah, your dad held a spear at the Met on Saturday. Supernumerary, in other words, an extra.
It was in the Metropolitan Opera.
Yeah, yeah. And so I went, I think there was a grudging sort of, there was a lot more to be said about Barney Tambor than he was letting on to.
Right. Now, you started losing your hair when you were still in high school. Was that a big deal? I know people who that happened to and to whom it was like just incredibly upsetting.
It was awful. It was terrible. I remember my father cried, first of all. And that's true.
He felt that he was bald and you inherited it from him and it was his fault or something.
Right.
Right.
And then that was another thing that was on the napkins. It's my fault. and so he was very upset. The thing that turned out great was that I would go to Summerstock and I would play all the older men. When I was growing up, there was a character on TV. There was a character stereotype. It was personified by Mel on the Dick Van Dyke Show. Do you remember Mel?
Mel Cooley, who was the head writer for the... Was he the head writer or the producer?
He was the producer.
The producer.
And so I was a young actor who was bald, but at that time, there was a thing on television that if there was a prototype or a stereotype of a principal... was always a principal who was bald and mean with glasses. Or the boss, the angry boss who was bald. That was personified by Fred Clark on the Eve Arden show. And so that was the sort of thing that I sort of aspired to. I said, okay, well, I'll be the bald character man who will always be number 6 or 5 or 4 on the call sheet, and that's where I will live my life. And literally, that was my career concept.
I think probably the first place I ever saw you, although I didn't know it was you, was on an Avis ad. And Avis Rent-A-Car had this ad campaign.
There was a How can you possibly remember that?
Well, because...
Mike.
No, in looking up your work, I found this ad, and I remember these ads. There's
yeah.
a period when Hertz was like the number one rental car agency,
right.
and they had this ad with O.J. Simpson
right.
running through the airport to get to
right.
the Hertz counter, and the gist right. of the ad was Hertz for people in a hurry.
You right.
know? And it's like the superstar agency for people in a hurry. So Avis, that was always like the we're number two, but we try harder rent-a-car
right.
agency, they had an ad in which like you're you're this like person on a business trip is what we presume, and you're very beleaguered and you're running through the airport like OJ and you're jumping over a velvet rope like OJ in the airport, but you're panting, you're like mopping your forehead. And in this ad, an Avis representative catches up with you and says, like, you don't have to run. And you go, oh,
I remember this.
I don't have to run.
I remember.
Let's listen to it. Let's listen to it. And the first voice
oh
we hear.
God.
Yeah. First voice we'll hear is the Avis representative, and then we'll hear Jeffrey Tambor.
Sir, what's the hurry?
Oh, going to rent a car.
Oh, well, you don't have to run.
Gotta run.
Oh, no. If you had an Avis wizard number, you could walk.
Walk.
Call toll-free and let our wizard system do the running. Just show a major credit card, license, sign, and get the car.
I don't have to run through airport?
Not with Avis.
I can walk through airport.
We try hard to raise this. We don't know another way.
I'm walking through everything.
Oh, my God. I don't know. I can remember it like it was yesterday. It was Newark Airport, and I was exhausted by the end of the day. Isn't that funny that you should? You know, I forgot about that.
So what effect did this Avis ad have on your career? Did it help you get anything else? Other commercials or actual roles?
You have to understand, I've done about 10 to 12 years of regional theater. And then I decided to come to New York, and I had to start all over again. So I made my living doing commercials. And I did a lot because, again, there was that young husband, balding husband, sort of thing that was very attractive to advertising. And I did that for years. I made $40,000 my first year here. I couldn't get arrested in any legitimate theater.
So one of the great roles that you played was on the Larry Sanders Show. And Larry Sanders was played by Gary Shandling. And Larry was this late night Tonight Show style host. And you played the sidekick, Hank. And your catchphrase was, you want to do it for us?
Hey now.
Yeah. And so I want to play a scene from the Larry Sanders Show in which Larry Sanders tells you that maybe it's time to drop your catchphrase, hey now. So here's my guest, Jeffrey Tambor, with Gary Shandling on the Larry Sanders Show.
You know, Hank, I was just wondering why you say that hey now thing.
What do you mean?
Well, it's just something that you used on the show, and now you're starting to use it in your personal life, and it's an affectation of some sort, isn't it? Did you ever say hey now as a kid?
No, I don't. I probably didn't.
Uh-huh.
I said, hey.
Yeah.
And I said, now.
Times. I
but
see.
I never put them together till later in life.
Uh-huh.
So, in that sense, it's part of my personality.
You know, Hank, this isn't easy for me, but would you mind not doing it on the show anymore? Because, frankly, I'll tell you the
truth.
Wait
a minute. Are you telling me that when you do your, you do this, that isn't the same affectation? That isn't the same as my, hey now?
There, you just said it again. And, you know, I asked you not to say it.
I can't say it off stage either?
It doesn't even exist. Use hey now in a sentence, Hank.
Hey now, that was real funny.
You know what, Hank? It's not even in the dictionary, hey now.
Okay, this is how I use hey now in a sentence, okay? You say, and of course, my sidekick, Hank.
And of course, my sidekick, Hank.
Hey now!
Hank?
That's a sentence.
No. Hank, listen. I just prefer you not do it on the show anymore, okay? I just, it gets on my nerves, it gets on the audience's nerves as well.
No, sir.
Yes, it does.
No.
Hank?
Look, you're not out there. And believe me, it's very big with the audience.
No.
And I'm going to tell you something else. I think it helps make the show work. It's part of our whole interplay on camera.
By interplay, you mean the times we're both awake?
Hey, now.
Just cut down on it. Could you do that, please?
That's a scene from the Larry Sanders Show with Gary Shandling and my guest, Jeffrey Tambor.
Everything, when I watched Gary Shandling, I said, whatever he's doing is what I believe in. That's what I believe comedy is. It's not pat. It's not automatic. It's not super performed. It's sort of messy and very, very funny. And he goes past the laugh to get something else. And I said, I believe in that. And I remember as I watched it saying, but I never put two and two together. And then I'm in the room and I think I did. The audition that I did for him is no different than when I did finally film it. I think I had it so tightened down that on the director's DVD, you can still see my audition for that. I do remember being so possessed in the audition that when the character of Larry started to leave and Hank didn't want him, in the audition, I took an entire sofa, picked it up, and put it in the doorway. And I remember to block his exit. And I remember Gary looking over at the casting director, Francine Maisler, and giving a little bit of a nod. And I think I had the role from that moment on.
So this final question, this might be heading into territory
I kind of want to talk to you for the rest of my life.
That's so sweet. I would enjoy that too.
Yes.
So you've been sober for, I don't know, more than a decade. I don't know how many years exactly.
15.
I'm wondering if it's liberating to be sober in the sense that, you know, an actor has to be kind of naked in a lot of ways, like you're inhabiting somebody else, but you have to feel free to go to uncomfortable places and everything and to not be, to be open to feeling things. And if you have a secret, like if you've been secretly drinking or something, that that has to kind of close you off in some way. So I would assume. So I'm wondering if it's easier to be open in a way that you must as an actor when you're sober.
Well,
even though people think it's
sober,
more freeing to, you know, to be high.
Yeah, actually, I can only speak for me. Mm-hmm. In my life, I find that in sobriety, I feel much more, and I have much more depth. I also feel, not to segue, but as being a parent of five kids, I can bring much more to my acting. And so I'm all about anything that gives you more feeling and more depth. You also feel more. And in feeling more, the waters can get rough. But so what? Let the waters be rough. I don't think if I hadn't been sober, I don't think I would have even been around for Transparent.
Right. Thank you for that.
Yeah. I think your resources are feeling. Your resources are depth. Your resources are learning. Your resources are touching and feeling. And to me, sobriety helps and aids all of that.
Jeffrey Tambor, I enjoyed our talk immensely. Thank you
so
much for doing this.
Me too. Thank you. Okay, so we talk every 10 years. Is that correct?
That's true. We could speed it up a little bit.
I think we're going to have to.
We're going to have to. Jeffrey Tambor stars in the Amazon series Transparent. He was just nominated for a second Golden Globe for his performance. All of season 2 will be up tomorrow.